Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic. I trust you have had an interesting and informative and intelligent and based week. So cheers, everybody. Cheers, Paul. Cheers, Lipton. Cheers, Stella. Cheers, Rashmush Shashan. Cheers, who else is there? Yes, cheers, John Confused. Cheers, Scrub-a-dub-dub. Cheers, Milky. Cheers, Sale Shop. Hurligan Gurligan. Capis. Salu. Saludo. Proust.
Lahayam.
Yes, Turbis Sexy. Yes, and Slanger. And Slangervar. And welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We're, of course, online public house, which meets on Mondays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, which discuss based science. So cheers, Tommy, and things that are and interesting stuff in the news and things that are increasingly expunged from our woke joke universities. Rateg One is saying custom retardiness. Ed, it's 2 minutes. That's 2 minutes. 2 minutes. What are we, Japan? We're not Japan here. We're the opposite of that. Cheers, Charlie Pepper. Hurligan Gurligan, spelt wrong. I think, I don't know if that's how you spell Hurligan Gurligan. I've never actually seen it written down. Cheers, everybody, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. Okay, we have a very special guest for you today, and that is Doctor, mind you, because she's just passed. Well, she's actually, if you haven't been given it yet, you've just passed, then you would be Doctorus, one who will become a doctor. So, Doctorus, Stella O'Malley. Stella, please introduce yourself.
I've just been given whatever the word is, awarded my PhD in gender dysphoria, following kind of parents' perceptions of gender dysphoria, because for the last, I'm a psychotherapist, and for the last nearly 10 years now, I've been kind of drowning in the trans issue. Inadvertently, I was just a normal general psychotherapist living in rural Ireland, minding my own business. And I wrote an article in 2017. And that article led me to do a film for Channel 4 in 2018. And that film in Channel 4, which was called Trans Kids, It's Time to Talk, that kind of engulfed me in this issue, because I just had so many really sad, devastating, awful emails from people who were saying, help me. And I haven't been able to get out of it since. And I yielded to it a few years ago and just said, okay. And I started GenSpect, an organization to promote a psychological approach to gender issues.
She sounds like Keith Woods, says Neil Christie. Well, yeah, she's Irish. I mean, I would say, I don't know if it's the same accent. I don't know where, I think Keith Woods is from Galway, County Galway. I don't know if that's where Stella is from. But where are you from in Ireland, Stella?
I'm from Dublin, but my dad is from Galway, and I live in rural Ireland for the last 20 years, so I'm probably a bit of a mix of an accent.
Okay, excellent. So it's a slight Galway accent, possibly inherited via her father. Right, now I'll start off then. We're going to talk about all kinds of things today, chaps. We're going to talk about this. But one thing that's happened in the last week is there was a march. There was a march in London in which trans men, and I suppose some trans women, no, mainly trans women though, turned up and argued that they should be allowed to use the loos of their assigned gender. And they stood in Parliament Square in front of Millicent Fawcett, who was obviously she's dead, and she was a eugenicist, but in front of a statue of Millicent Fawcett, and argued their case. So we'll start off with that then, before we look a bit into Stella's interesting story, which is, should these people just be allowed to use women's loos? They dress as women. What's the problem?
Well, I suppose it's kind of, you know, as my ma would say, it's all fun and games till somebody loses an eye. It's all fine until it isn't. And if you're in a, you know, a train station and it's late at night, and suddenly the person in the loo is a man, but you had thought they were a woman, and they have a male voice, and actually statistically they are much more likely to offend against you, suddenly you're in a very dangerous position. So it's all fine in lots of different contexts. I get it. But if we brought in rules for a reason, for a civilized society, we decided to keep the sexes apart in prisons, keep the sexes apart in hospitals, to the most part, toilets, just to give people privacy, dignity. And it's different for women. It's not the same. You know, you not caring whether a girl goes into the toilet doesn't equate to me not caring whether a man. It's we're operating on two different levels of risk.
But Stella, can I ask a very quick question? It would have to be a very large todger for you to lose an eye, surely.
It would. But that's, of course, that's the thing. That's
that was a metaphor.
Oh, sorry. We're very literal-minded on this channel, Stella.
We are very. That's what I assumed you meant as well. It would have to be very large and like tapered, sharp.
Stella. Hi. Yeah.
Hello.
So you're going to get your PhD. So that means you're smart and serious, and Eddie's a bit unserious. So just stick to the point.
Yes. Well, I was going to say. Oh, obviously, it's a semi-serious point. When I was working for the Royal Bank of Scotland in 1999, I was in the stall of a loo. In the men's loo, and the bloke next to me did the most god almighty, incredibly loud fart, right? and I burst out laughing, right? And then he was obviously behind the wall. He burst out laughing, and then when we left the stalls and were washing our hands, we both just laughed. It was just like hilarious, right? But if that had been a woman, then that would have been a little bit embarrassing for her, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, so that for that reason alone, yeah. Like, women should have somewhere where they can tread on a duck and not be judged.
On that point, though, when you know in Ireland they had this ridiculous scenario where they keep on bringing in on the sly mixed sex toilets, and what they've done a few times in a row is they've given the parents plans where they're separate toilets, and then they do a switcheroo, and they brought in mixed sex toilets, which is just extraordinarily sly and inappropriate. But when you're a girl and you're just got your first period and you're figuring out life around periods, it's actually awful. It's difficult, and the last thing you want is some boy next door who's 13 years old sniggering. You just don't want it. And so to give girls their privacy and dignity, I think it's very much worth. We have it. These are rules that we have well established. Why are we blowing them apart for pretend reasons? We don't need them. We don't need those rules. I'm very much in favour, by the way, of a third toilet. Where
we have a third toilet. It's called the disabled.
Yeah. But if we had a fourth toilet, then where it is for people who want to play around with their genders, and people who want to medically transition or whatever they want to do. Or maybe make more disabled toilets where it's the third toilet. It's for whatever reason, it's the third toilet. You'd need to make more of them.
I've only been in a gender-neutral loo situation once, and that was when the first time I met Paul, actually. We were at this conference in Liverpool, at the Liverpool Exhibition Centre, or I don't know what it was called. And I came out, and it was just stalls, and I came out, and where you were washing your hands, there was women. And I just didn't like that. I didn't expect that. I was taken aback. I thought, have I come into the wrong loo?
That is, you know, honestly, we're all being swindled right here having this conversation, because that's not the point. The point of the conversation is to neutralize this idea that there's different sexes. And the point is really why I would be up in arms and saying we need to fight for this is because of prisons. It's because of domestic refuges. It's because of actually more serious issues. And so when you get this concept of mixed sex wards, mixed sex cells, mixed sex toilets, you've kind of brought in a concept that you look like your old hat. You look like your old fashioned for saying, no, prisons should be segregated. And of course, very few people will argue the prisons shouldn't be segregated. But in the weird 2020s, suddenly sports, prisons, all of them are being mixed together. And toilets is just the silly representation of a serious issue.
Sports is absurd. I should say, by the way, if you're watching and Arabic is your first language, my book, Race and Sport, Evolution and Racial Differences in Sporting Ability, is now available in Arabic. Anyway, sport is a case in point, obviously. That's these people are just talking about lose. But you can argue that lose are the thin end of the wedge, aren't they?
Once pretending you start. That's the point. It's just like that's the what's the word? The entry point. It's not about toilets. It's about prisons. It's about the serious issues. Sorry.
Yeah, but Stella, don't you believe in the broken window idea? Like in New York, if you don't deal with the little stuff, the bigger stuff happens.
Yeah, which is why I think they should keep the toilets separate.
Yeah, but you were saying this is a slightly, it's not the main issue. We know it's not the main issue, but if you let one thing go, it just keeps accumulating.
Exactly. So I agree with you. And so on that basis, when they are arguing for toilets, I'm like, yeah, they're actually arguing for a lot more than toilets.
It's a Trojan toilet.
Trojan system.
It's a giant toilet, and they all hide inside, and you push it into the castle, thinking that you can have like a relaxing wee, and then all of the Greeks come out, and
the French are ahead of us, though, aren't they? Because they just have holes in the ground.
It's queering society. It's this idea that we should queer everything, queer all the norms. And that's fundamentally what it is. It's breaking down all the kind of, I suppose, qualities of a civilized society are being attempted to be queered. And yeah. I don't think we need to. I think we have to leave it alone.
Like in the Republic of Ireland, back when girls used to get pregnant out of wedlock and they'd take them into these homes, these laundries, right? And to punish them for their sins. Yes. Because they were bad. Just leave. They've done something wrong. Leave it alone. Yeah. Look at Ireland now. It swaps prime ministers every 2 weeks. It's crazy.
Well, Ireland is a very good example of a backlash, though. Like, we were really, really regressive, and now we're so progressive we've lost our minds. Stella, what do you put it down to?
Just an overreaction to the Catholic Church, or what?
Yeah. I think it is. I think it's a massive overreaction. We were always kind of, we viewed ourselves as backward. We were an island off, you know, on Western Europe. And we were quite backward for so many years. We weren't as forward as let's say, England and you know, most of Europe. And so then we kind of caught up very fast, like a little brother or a little sister who's kind of going really fast. Mm-hmm. And I think we've kind of overextended ourselves, and we're very busy trying to be the most progressive in the world without really having the depth of knowledge that we should have to make these decisions.
Sinead O'Connor said that, "I see the Irish as a race like a child that got itself bashed in the face."
Why is a Welsh person commenting about Ireland?
All my accents are Welsh, as you know. I think I can do a good Irish accent. In fact, I can do a very good Northern Irish one if I try. Yes, that's what she said. And that's another thing, is she was completely insane. And she's now just borderline personality, crazy woman. And she's sort of taken seriously and goes on and on and on about
it. But she died. She was a beautiful singer, you know. But yeah, she definitely was very, very, very challenged.
Have you read her autobiography?
Who am I?
Whose autobiography?
Sinead O'Connor.
I think that lady.
Obviously made up. Like, there's obviously loads of stuff in it that never happened.
Yeah.
Like her mum beat her naked, locked her in a room for 3 days with no water.
Oh, wait. That mother was pretty, like, because there's another, you know, the unreliable narrator would be Sinead, but it's very interesting family. Her brother is Joseph O'Connor, who's a very well-known author. And he attests to the fact that the mother was crazy.
Yeah, I'm sure she was crazy, but she wasn't crazy enough to leave a child with no water for 3 days. That's insane.
Oh, I don't know. It might be
an oversight.
Yeah. No, she was bonkers. Yeah, she was bonkers. Fine.
Still on.
Isn't 3 days about how long can you survive without water?
That day.
I'm saying that it's my turn to speak. It has been speaking for a long time.
He's been taking your time, Lipton.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's my turn to speak.
Let him speak.
Exactly.
Ed.
I'm saying that trans women are men and they transition. People have a problem with them transitioning, but personally, it's real life. Like, even there are 5 different studies from 5 different government agencies in different countries, all arguing that trans medications have an adverse effect on the health of trans people, but that's their choice. Like, I'm not losing any sleep over them. That's their choice. They will have to deal with the implications of what they did to themselves.
Yes, I agree. But in your documentary, Stella, though, you interviewed a transitioning, a person who was born a man and became a woman, who was married, and said, I was suicidal and then I transitioned and now I'm fine.
Yeah,
but that doesn't seem to be consistent with the data. The data is that they just have mental health problems.
Well, you know, like, I work in psychotherapy and, like, for somebody to say, I'm going to die unless you give me this treatment, is not a good reason to give them the treatment, because, you know, it means that they are suicidal and they should be given treatment for their suicidality. So, you know, if I came into a clinician today and said, you got to give me, I don't know, you got to give me Adderall or I'm going to kill myself. That's not a reason to give them Adderall or Ritalin or anything else, if you follow me. It's just not, never been a reason. But post-medical transition is frighteningly high. And the fact is that when you think you've got a solution, which is medical transition, there's nothing more alluring really than you can be a different person with a different body, a different name. Everybody's going to see you differently. You might look like that cool person from YouTube, and you're going to create yourself. It's a very alluring concept. It's actually a massive concept. And so they think, I can be somebody else. And the doctors nod along and tell them they can be somebody else. And then actually they can't. Wherever you go, there you are. You can't run away from yourself. So it takes some years. And you know what? People are free to medically transition, like you said, Lipton. They certainly are. But you have to think about where should the medical resources of a hospital devote their resources to? Where should the insurance companies be insuring? What should they be insuring? Like, what sort of medical procedures should they be putting their money to? And when it is something that causes a huge amount of physical complications. I did meetings like for detransitioners, and I just come from a meeting today with detransitioners whose lives are ruined. These are people who medically transitioned and now have reverted back to their biological sex. You know, we're talking about like, you know, 5 heart attacks, incontinence, panic attacks, and
an average Friday night for us, Ed.
Yes, that is for us, but we know what we're doing, Paul. You know, we're not 16-year-olds that have got on puberty blockers. I mean,
Stella, could I just back you up as well against Lipton's point? It maybe wouldn't be so difficult if everyone was over 21 and they were doing whatever they wanted to themselves, but Lipton's point doesn't address children.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I also think what happens, as I know somebody who is, you know, psychotic and went to their clinic and they sought medical transition, should that person be able to transition when they're not well in themselves, but they think this is their happy? So at what point do you think this is a very vulnerable person? And also, what point do you think should your taxes be funding people who are medically transitioning for something that is statistically more likely to make them more distressed, more mental health challenges, more criminology, more likely to suicide, more likely to be unemployed, more likely for criminology? Should that be an intervention that is offered in a hospital as if it's healthcare, or should it be in a clinic as a kind of a cosmetic procedure?
But if they have a fantasy or a delusion, then it seems to me to be completely ridiculous to participate in and encourage it. So if a woman comes up to you and says, oh, I'm terribly fat, I'm so fat, and they're clearly ridiculously thin, then you say, no, well, that's absurd. You have a problem. You have body dysmorphia.
That's the position I take, that we take a psychological view that, like, your distress is real. I've no doubt your distress is real, and I'd like to help you in your distress. But if an anorexic comes to me and says, I need weight loss injections and liposuction, I don't think I'm being a decent or ethical therapist by saying, yes, that's what you need.
Stella, you're free. Have you seen the interview with Az Hakim on Daily Heretics?
Yeah, I know Az anyway. Yeah, go on.
Well, no, it was just it's one of the best interviews. Not being, you know, very knowledgeable in the area, but it was one of the best interviews I've seen from a professional psychiatrist, just laying out how it is in practice and how we analyze the different types of trans and how they've all been conflated. Yeah. And because it makes me think, I know it's an incredibly serious issue, but it's indicative of much wider social trends. He mentions affirmation. It's this constant need to be affirmed. But that goes beyond gender issues. That's all across our society. And even on this channel, I've noticed me and Ed actually have some good disagreements, but people lose their shit in the comments because they don't understand what a civilized disagreement is. They want their opinions constantly affirmed.
Yeah.
People aren't allowed to disagree anymore.
Like, they particularly didn't like it when I once had on here, Stella, twice actually, I had on here a trans woman, but a homosexual trans woman.
Yeah.
And the first time I had this person on, it was just to talk about being a homosexual trans woman. And the second time was because this person was expressing interesting opinions and whatever. And there was some particularly large Twitter, right-wing Twitter account, and he went crazy, you know, saying I'm supporting all this and I'm encouraging all this. And I just thought to myself, well, I don't care. I don't care I mean, some. I don't care what they are. I mean, they've got interesting views, and they could be a rabbit for all I care, a talking rabbit. But no, this was considered so unacceptable. You're not on my side. This means you're not on my side. I assumed you were on my side, which means you agree with me on everything.
Well, that's the problem, that we can't just, let's say, for somebody like me, can't just say, well, I take a psychological approach to this. And for that, this is considered, heretical or something, or, it's inappropriate. And I think it's a very valid point that it is a fail. You said it yourself, Ed, it's a psychological issue. And I take a psychological approach to a psychological issue. But the point of affirmation, as somebody who's worked in it for the last 20 years, we've just slipped into affirming everything. So we used to offer a psychological process when somebody came in to me, and it would be challenging and there might be kind of difficulties and conflicts. But now we offer psychological support. And the point is, I support you. I'm like your support person. I'm like your support dog. That's not appropriate, and it's not working out. And affirming people is happening across the board. It's not just gender affirmative.
This is my point. Yeah. And what I'm really fearful of, I've seen the university sector and that affirmation of any bonkers opinion. But the point is, you're seeing it with activist judges now. But in the next 20, 30 years, as those people in university go more and higher up the chain in the professions, this type of mad need for affirmation, the inability to have disagreements, it's going to get worse and worse and worse. And I don't see where it's going to end.
Stella, I
have a question for Stella, since she's a professional. Stella, do medical professionals have an obligation to flatter egos? If research shows that people who detransition report better levels of mental health, should medical professionals encourage people to become trans, knowing that the studies are not in favor of transitioning supporting mental health?
We're not supposed to encourage anybody to do anything. We're supposed to kind of respect people's autonomy, and so we do. So this idea that conversion therapy, that people are somehow bewitching people to become trans or not become trans, it's just no ethical therapist to go on to do it. So if you told me, if you came to me, Lifton, and you said you wanted to be a woman, I would say, right, let's discuss it. Let's explore it. Let's take a psychological approach to that. I'm not going to try and talk you out of it or talk you into it, but I'm certainly going to look at all the issues that are arising with this. And some people, I would say affirmative therapists, would just say, if you came to them and said, I want to be a woman, they'd say, here's the number, this is where you need to go, and I'll help you find your medical approach. And I think that's crazy. Why be a psychotherapist if you're not going to give psychological insight?
Indeed. So can I ask, Stella, so you went through a phase from the age of 4 to the age of about 13 or 14, something like that, of identifying as a boy. Is that correct?
That's putting 2020's language onto, my experience. So let's say I was born in 1974 and I was a strange kid, definitely. And at around about the age of 3, I wanted to be a boy. And I was very fervent, and it lasted very many years. And the big line they use about children these days are they insistent, consistent, and persistent. And I was all of those three things. And had I been asked, would you like puberty blockers when I went into puberty? I would have bit the hand off you. Yeah, absolutely. I was appalled when I went into puberty. It was a devastating, oh my God, stop this. This is awful. Now, it's many, many years later. So I just realized once I heard the word puberty blockers, I thought that's a crazy intervention. Why would you stop people's sexual development when actually sexual development is what is going to get you out of it? Because when you fancy other people and you start wanting to fall in love and mate for life, that's when you become less self-absorbed and more absorbed about other people and less conscious about yourself and more interested in mating. Why would you stop that in people? When they're already, frankly, too self-absorbed because they're thinking, I want to be me, 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 me. I want to be a boy. So I knew kind of intuitively it was a dreadful intervention. And now all the evidence has shown that there is no way children's puberty should be stopped. Of course, anybody with any sort of common sense would say you don't block development in children so that they don't fall in love, they don't have crushes, they don't have a sexual awakening, their genitals don't grow, the little boy's penis stays the same size, the little girl stays the same, no pubic hair all through their teen years. Everybody else is having crushes, falling in love, having those little sexual awakenings that happen. None of that's happening. They're still in the mind of a child, playing with their toys because they haven't.
Sorry, excuse my ignorance. I don't know why I've never asked this before. Presumably, it stops them intellectually developing. Does it stop their brain growth?
Key point. So when you go into adolescence, when you start to complexify your brain, you're fancying somebody else. They're fancying you. You're developing your social functionings because you realize, and I want them to fancy me. There's all sorts of complexity that is developing. Your brain doesn't grow in your teen years. It gets more complex. It gets more developed. And when your puberty is blocked, your actual sexual development, and we don't know what else is blocked, but we do know the urge to mate, the urge to fall in love, the urge for romantic, you know, all the songs you loved, all the films, forget about it. You're still in a childlike state. You haven't developed that side of you.
There was, I remember reading discussion of castratos, and that was something that they carried on doing until the mid-19th century or something like that in Italy.
Later, yeah.
And they all commented on this, that not only did they have peculiar weird bodies, but they were very childlike and sort of unreasonable, and this was commented on.
So between 10 and 20, the urge to fall in love, to have a mate for life, that emerges, and that loneliness that the adolescent has, that happens in those years, and then ultimately you fall in love once, twice, whatever. And you ultimately, hopefully, find somebody to settle down with. If you're not experienced that urge to fall in love, you're still childlike. So there was a man, James Linehan, and he was born with an intersex condition. So he never went into puberty. And he gave a great talk at the GenSpec conference in Albuquerque. And he explained when he was 12, 14, 15, he was there playing with his toys. And he just was playing with the 10-year-olds on the street. He didn't care that the 15-year-olds of his age were going out and dating and all that. He just thought, I have more toys and I'm the leader of the kids, because he was still childlike, while all the other 15-year-olds had social sensibilities and sensitivities that he hadn't developed because he hadn't gone into puberty. Now, because he had an intersex condition, he was ultimately given a drug to bring on his puberty, and he ended up going into puberty and off he went. But it was an interesting insight into the brain of a child who hasn't gone into puberty. You can see it when the kid hasn't gone into puberty and the other kids have. And they're way behind. You can see the difference.
Yeah. I remember I once applied for a job teaching RE at a girls' private school in Salisbury.
What could possibly go wrong?
Nothing. Called something like Lady Godolphin School. Didn't get the job. But anyway, as part of the interview, I had to teach a year 7 class about the Sermon on the Mount. And there were 3 girls that were saying intelligent things. And those 3 girls were in what I thought of in my head as pubic corner, which was that they all had breasts, they were well-developed, they were whatever, right? And very conspicuously so, and very conspicuously more intelligent than these children. These little small children that was the rest of the class. I mean, the difference was shocking. And this was just in one class.
There's a complexification that happens. And when they stop puberty, and so just think of Jazz Jennings, the famous kid who was born a boy, would have been gay had he been left to his own devices. Do you know who Jazz Jennings is? And his mother an American kind of hero of the trans world, was told as a little boy when he was about 4 that he was a little girl. You know, you believe your mother and father, so you went with it, presented as a girl, you know, and then went into puberty. Didn't go into puberty because had puberty blockers and was completely childlike. You can see it. And then at 18 would go into all the children whose puberty is stopped. Then they go into a chemically induced sexual development of the other sex. They never actually awaken their own reproductive organs. So therefore, if you think about it as a girl, your ovaries are never woken because you never actually go into your own natural puberty. So that whole urge to mate is blocked, and instead a chemically induced adult is formed.
I read in a book called by what's his name? Goodness, it's so terrible. I can't read. I've interviewed him on my show. J. Michael Bailey. He wrote a book called the Men Who Would Be Queen or something like this.
And, the Man Who Would Be Queen, yeah.
Yes, and there was a case of a boy who, I don't know, it's insane practice they used to engage in America where they circumcise people. And there was a case where this went wrong. And so the boy with his mutilated penis was brought up as a girl. That was what they thought he could get away with back then. And of course, it was appalling when he went through puberty and he brought up a girl. And even before he went through puberty, he was always kind of boy-like.
Well, that was the case. John Money, who was, you know, the founder, kind of considered the kind of grandfather of gender identity theory, he was a crazy intervener of children. And he raised that David Raymer, who had that awful botched kind of operation at 10 months old. He was a little boy and he had a twin brother. And so David Raymer was raised as a girl, never knew that he was a boy. He was given a kind of neo-vagina as a little baby and told he was a girl, and always wanted to, kind of always ended up wanting to be a boy. So that kind of the testosterone came out because it would have been still within him, even though that they were giving him interventions. It was a disaster because that man in the end, David Raymer, died by suicide, and so did his twin. And John Money ended up being completely discredited. And you're like, and that was the beginning of gender identity theory. Like, it's an extraordinarily discredited science that just doesn't stand up to any sort of valid evidence. You can do it, but don't tell me that there's a strong evidence base to support this as a healthy intervention.
So what happened, Stella, when you were about 14 or whatever, and you decided, no, I'm going to sort myself out?
I was lucky enough to go through puberty, so I was having all these crushes and realizing nobody's going to fancy me because they all think I'm a boy. Do you know what I mean? So there was a kind of a dreadful kind of reckoning. And I remember realizing that nature was bigger than me and there was nothing I could do about it, that no matter what, no matter how strong my will was, no matter how much I convinced the world that I was a boy, that nature was making me a girl. So I do remember just thinking, this is bigger than me. Do you ever feel like have a sense of drowning in the sea and you suddenly realize, oh, the sea is so much bigger than me. Like I haven't a chance against this. I remember feeling that about my body, just my body was changing and there was nothing I could do. So ultimately, slowly but surely, I came around to the idea that I was a woman. And I think honestly, not to be a hippie about it, I think falling in love and being loved was very healing for me, actually, you know, just kind of brought me around to myself.
They have school uniform Irish schools, or at least they used to. So did you wear boys' clothes at your school?
So I was like a little weirdo in primary school. I wore I was the only kid in the school. So the boys wore grey flannel trousers, and the girls wore kilts, and I wore jeans. I just wore trousers. So, and then I wore the top of the uniform. So they let me, they didn't build a policy around me. They didn't give me a sense of power. They didn't make me feel like I was the most special kid in the world. They just looked the other way and let me wear trousers. And I think that's appropriate. I think creating policies around kids is a very dubious thing to do. It gives them a kind of an over-the-top sense of specialness. And I don't think they can handle it because they're immature. So they let me off. They let me do it.
Stella, could I ask a question? Because I'm genuinely not being rude, because everything you're saying makes perfect sense. And but part of my problem is the way these kids are being treated is so obviously stupid, mad, insane, and indefensible. There isn't much more to say in the sense that it's just beyond belief that it's happening, and chemical castration, all these things are actually happening. But from a psychological background, what are your views on the actual social environment, the social psychological atmosphere that's enabling all this to happen?
Well, I started off just being interested in, like, these children, we shouldn't be giving them puberty blockers, we need to stop that, let them have their sexual awakening, and then they can be free to do whatever they want as an adult. And that was very much my position. But then as life went on and I realized, hang on, this is actually part of a culture of extreme tolerance that seems to be hitting us left, right and center on all sorts of other sociological fronts. And actually, this is a culture of affirmation of that's your truth and you do you, that actually is not doing well in society. And so we called our new podcast Beyond Gender, because I thought, if you think it's just about trans issues, just like if you think it's just about toilets, you're missing the issue. It's not just about trans issues and it's not just about toilets. It's a much wider sociological issue where the culture of extreme tolerance have us nodding along to very bad ideas. And people are afraid. It kind of arguably started in the 60s with Live and Let Live, but now it's become this extreme level of...
Well, why do you think it's gone? Why do you think it's gone hyper?
You know, isn't that this is why we're here. We're all trying to figure that one out. I've studied the trans issue, the kind of extreme diagnosis, the over-diagnosis, the over-medicalization, the over-the-top emphasis on victimhood. There's a lot of different reasons. I could talk about it for hours, but it's all part of a society problem.
No, I was going to say, because it's an unfortunate phrase, but you're a bit like, you're sticking your finger in the dike, aren't you? Which probably shouldn't be applied to this area. But because you're on the coalface of all this tsunami, to mix metaphors wildly, of all these gender-confused people. But if the supply of these gender-confused people is due to myriad structural issues, then all you're doing is firefighting. And as a society, we're not going to get a handle on it.
I don't agree. I think that actually people are starting to figure out, this is crazy. What are we doing? We need to start bringing respect back into the rules that we already had, such as separate toilets or whatever, that like civilized society depends on a certain level of agreed knowledge and a social contract. And when we break down the social contract, arguably we're going to have chaos and anarchy. And I think that's what's happening. And
Stella, I think, how would you respond then to the idea that the Supreme Court, you know, probably about a year ago, made a definitive judgment in the UK? But still, that hasn't been acted upon. So on the one hand, you could say, yes, people are coming to their senses. But if people in the civil service and people in government don't hold them to account, and they keep defying even a Supreme Court judgment, and there's the secondary issue, why should you need a Supreme Court judgment to tell you what's bloody obvious? But you're fighting against people who, even when there's a Supreme Court judgment, just refuse to obey, because they're that ideologically driven. So what do you do about that?
Well, I don't know, but all I know is I can't stop when somebody tells me something is crazy, and I have to tell the truth. I presume every one of you here have the same impetus, and I think a lot of people who'll be listening are just saying, I just can't abide it. It's going too far. It's kind of too crazy making. And so, yeah, the Supreme Court was an amazing judgment, and I actually think the wind is in our favor. I know they're ignoring it now, but I think in the long term, I do think actually sanity will prevail.
Well, yeah, I'm just being devil's advocate. Yeah. But for example, there are Labour politicians in the current by-election. Andy Burnham has flim-flammed over women's rights. And for a long time, whether it's the Greens or Labour, huge sections of the population, and even the Conservatives, because Theresa May introduced a lot of this bollocks. But why? It's beyond me, as roughly 51% of the population, women keep voting for policies that are diametrically opposed to their own gender interests.
Well, it's very interesting that we women are the kind of the great supporters, just like George Orwell pointed out in 1984. We're the ones who are really, really pushing the agenda of extreme tolerance.
Can I interject with the point? Yeah. If we go back, we talked earlier about, you know, the Ireland of before the 80s or whatever, when it was extremely Catholic and so on. I mean, the change often probably started in the 90s. But if you in England as well, if you go back to, if you look at the generation that was born in 1920, they were more right wing than the women were more right wing than the men. And if you look at the generation born in 1970, it's reversed. And the reason for that is consistent with your Orwell allusion that they are the mouths of the party slogans or whatever, I forget the full quote, is that's what women are hyper-social conformist. and therefore, if it's a very right-wing society, they will be very right-wing. And all, if you go back to the 30s and 40s, all of these eugenics societies or whatever were dominated by women. And then it's completely reversed. Now it's all of the most left-wing. The Billy Graham rallies in the 50s. Was it like Glasgow, what's it called, Ibrox? Was like 80% women, and they would go to the front and be blessed, and they would collapse and go crazy. And now it's the Black Lives Matter rallies or 20. Well, it's St George's. It's St George's Day today, isn't it? It's the anniversary today of the event. Yes, it is. It is. It's St George's Day. Happy St George's Day, everybody. And so then you have it's the women that shave their hair off and lie on the ground prostrate and whatever. So that makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, women are more socially sensitive and they're seeking more social approval, arguably, than men. And so we are the kind of, we're the reflectors of society, of how society's thinking.
Right, and then what that means in turn is that for a woman
to be... It's the 23rd of April, St. George's Day. Yeah, I thought that was bollocks.
No, St. George Floyd.
Oh, right. Well, that makes sense.
So check George it. Floyd died in 2020 today.
I think so. Check it. I think so.
That's interesting.
Sorry for me. Forgive me for not jumping immediately to the idea it was St. George Floyd.
There's rather St. George.
I can see how you lost yourself.
But I think it's that evolutionary adaptation, yeah, which is why women don't necessarily vote in their own interests because they're
women need to be more conformist in society because arguably that's what you know keeps us safer. You know what I mean? You could see how that would be. Makes sense.
Well, until now, it's making them less safe.
I know.
Yeah, it's an adaptation to to hundreds of thousands of years ago, which is now maladaptive now. So I think that's why they don't necessarily vote in their own interests. But anyway,
Ed, so could you expand on that? How does the maladaptation process work?
Well, because we are evolved.
I understand that, but I'm just curious: are there any precise mechanisms where the maladaptation proceeds according to a certain predictable path?
You see it in experiments on animals. So if you take them out of their match, like what they're supposed to be in, and you put them in a bad zoo, like zoos, not the zoos they have now, but zoos of the old days, then it sends them crazy, and they do maladaptive things like chew their legs off. So it's right.
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. So and we're basically an animal that has made its own zoo. And we're not meant to live like this. We're meant to live with, you know, that's the reason why ethnic conflicts keep coming up. I was going to say, actually, with regard to not maturing, Stella, when I was younger, when I was sort of 9, 10, I hated the Irish. Because in my 10-year-old mind, the Irish come over here to England and they blow things up. So surely the solution, I used to say, as a 10-year-old, is to ban all Irish people from England. Stop
that's,
Irish
that's
people.
Funny, because as a 10-year-old, I had the very same opposite. Like, you know, why couldn't the English leave Ireland? It was very strong in my mind back then.
And then my mum would say things like, yeah, but you know the woman next door, Mrs. Birchnell, yeah, her son-in-law, Sean, yeah, he's Irish and he's really nice to you and you like him. Uh-huh. I was like, yeah, true, but still, ban them. Anyway, we're about halfway through, so for those of you that are new, hello, 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 and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We are an online public house, which meets on Mondays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, which discuss based science and psychology and stuff in the news and all kinds of malarkey. If you are new, will you do me a favour? Will you please subscribe? Would you subscribe on YouTube and leave a like and hit the bell button and leave a comment? And also subscribe on my Substack, because YouTube demonetizes me, which is thejollyheretic.com, where I put all the most based science, stuff I can't put on YouTube, in-person interviews. I want to do several on the Stellar, actually, because I've only just discovered all the interesting stuff about it. Vlogs, video films I make. And if you like what I do, you support me for the cost of a pint of beer a month. I would also like to emphasise that there's going to be a Jolly Heretic in-person meet-and-greet thing. This is with Lipton as well, which is happening on the 22nd of June in London, so central London. So please come along to that. And I have put an Eventbrite link in the description, so you can come to that, and I will do a speech. I imagine Lipton will do a speech and possibly even some dancing. Not dancing. He's not going to do dancing. He's just going to do a speech.
Stella, I wasn't invited to this get together.
Exactly. Paul should come.
I invite you. I invite you. I want you there as well. So the link is in the description. And also, before we have the meet and greet thing, there will be a meal, apparently, for six people. So you can buy a space at that meal, and you can eat a lovely dinner with me and Lipton, and have a fantastic laugh. And also, if you're going to ARC, which is the same week, which is where I first met Stella, actually, I will see you there. Right, good. So then next to me, we have Dr. Paul Taylor. He's not really called Lavi Fiebe, he's called Dr. Paul Taylor. And he has a very interesting YouTube channel as well, which is called Readers of the Lost Art, where he engages in a grumpy and misanthropic look at novels and plays and that are at least 100 years old.
I've come out of my shell. I've looked at tangentially this week. I've done a big thing on Frankenstein, big long video, but I use a lot on Cormac McCarthy. It's a Cormac McCarthy fan, but he's probably the most modern author I've ever used on the channel.
Cormac McCarthy, I've vaguely heard of him.
Blood Meridian. You'd love him. He's incredibly dark, macabre, vicious writing.
Irish, is he, or Scottish, or was he?
No, American.
He's American.
Stunning writer.
Not heard of him.
Do you like him, Stella?
I've never read the famous book, The Road. Everybody says bleak, and I just never went for it because of it. But everybody says it's amazing.
I
looked up George Floyd. It was today, 6 years
thank
ago.
Thank you. I thought so. And then below we have Mr. Lipton Matthews. He has a YouTube channel. It's called Lipton Matthews, in which all kinds of base people are queuing up to come on there because he's black and it makes them look good. So could you please subscribe to Lipton's channel as well? And Lipton has a new book out, don't you, Lipton?
Got a book review in American Renaissance.
Yes, it's been reviewed in America. What's the book called?
Busting African Delusions. Human Capital, Institutions and the Path to Progress.
Excellent. So go and buy that. And then finally, we have Doctorus, Stella O'Malley, who is over here in this direction. And she has a channel which is called
Beyond Gender is our podcast, and GenSpect is my organization.
Okay, and she has loads of books as well. So
I do. Yeah.
You can go and you can go
Stella,
and buy her.
Is it O'Malley or O'Malley?
I say O'Malley. I noticed.
It's just rare because Ed's dead posh. Normally he uses elongated vowels, but I think he overcompensated and deliberately insulted you and thought, I'll say Mally.
I've noticed English people say O'Malley. I've noticed that, so.
Yeah.
Right. So, anyway, Stella O'Malley. So go and subscribe there. Okay, we have a resident poet here at the Jolly Heretic.
You've upset him, Stella.
Mr. Quinn. And where is it? Here we go. And he has sent in the following poem for your delectation and delight. A question that's long overdue, just who is allowed in the loo? Trans malcontents should stick to the gents and avoid an unpleasant to-do. Brilliant. Hey. Thank you very much, Mr. Quinn. And please subscribe to Mr. Quinn's YouTube channel, which is resident poet at the Jolly Heretic Public House. And he is on the old Twitter. And you can buy his book of Jolly Heretic poetry on the old Amazon. Thank you, resident poet, and I hope to see you in June. Okay. Now, we have a number of questions that have been sent in so far. Yes, it's in the chat, folks, if you want to buy his book. I'll start putting that in the description of the video. Okay, so we have a question from Sensible Center. Cis prefix never caught on. Man, woman, simple. Yes, indeed, sir. Thank you very much. I concur. I agree. Okay, next question comes from James Ogden, BH5, and he says, more than two toilets just perpetuates this idiocy. Spend the toilet money on therapy. P.S. Edward Dutton for Prime Minister. Thank you very much, sir. I don't know of where I'd be Prime Minister. I presumably Finland. It was an interesting thing the other day, actually, that the President of Finland was on telly and he was taking questions. And a 10-year-old boy, I think he was 10, called Elias, rang in and said, "Mr. President, why do big countries keep starting wars?" I like that idea with reference to what you said about Ireland earlier, Stella. They started big countries. Ireland's a small country. These big countries keep doing bad things. It's very upsetting. Right. Next question is from it's not going down. It's not bloody hell. James Ogden. Ed, are you actually drinking a beer? Yes, I am. If so, which? I am drinking a Lecoq. It's a Estonian beer. So there you go. Get some cock on your neck. Finally, we have a question from James Ogden, BH5. Please ask Stella that question. What question? What, are you drinking beer? Are you drinking beer, Stella?
No, I am not. I'm on water.
She's drinking water. She's on. She's
not the spirit. Not I'm Irish.
She's going to say, Stella, have you lost your passport?
I love a nice glass of wine afterwards, I'd say.
That was, you're meant to drink, we're an online public house, remember, Stella, so you're meant to drink with us. But no, I remember there's that line in the Sinead O'Connor song, "Look at all our old men in the pubs, look at all our old people on drugs," young people on drugs. And the first time I came to Ireland, I got the bus, the coach from Dublin to Galway, and I went through many villages with drunken old men stumbling about outside pubs. I mean, that genuinely did happen.
We definitely had a very, very big problem with alcoholism. No doubt about that.
But you say had, like past tense.
And when you say problem.
No, it was a problem. It was a problem. I think it doesn't seem, I noticed my own kids, we don't seem to have the drink culture that we had when I was growing up. It doesn't seem to be as big a deal.
And when was the last great Irish writer? I'd say there's a direct proportionality between alcoholism and brilliant writing.
Would you?
Oh, yeah.
Who's that guy that writes in Irish, famously? There's one particular famous Irish writer, and he writes stuff in Irish.
I wouldn't be able to pronounce his name even if I knew it.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't know that. I speak Irish. Who's that?
I don't remember his name. That's what it could be, something quite normal like a Brian, but I'm sure there's some. I'm sure there's some particular guy. Yeah, yeah. So do you say, speaking Irish as you do, you would understand Scots Gaelic?
Nah, it's. I could kind of guess what they're saying, but
if I would say to you, "Cabra Harshif,"
that means "How are you?" I presume.
Yeah. So you say to me.
Conestatu.
No, you say Cabra Harshif Féin. How are you yourself?
Do you know Scottish Gaelic they don't have a sentence for "Is it my round"?
They do, because the Scots Gaelic speak as Irish people, so they will buy a round.
No, the Scots they've excised it from Scottish Gaelic centuries ago.
Ish Misha Ed.
They have 101.
Yeah.
Es fructi.
What the hell is that?
Cold. Fructi.
Oh, fur is Irish for cold. And fluck is Irish for wet. Sounds like a mix between the two.
And snog is Scots Gaelic for comfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
Snog.
And the snog. Do you have snogs in your pubs?
Yeah.
Presumably.
I think it might be related to the word snog. Like, it's nice and snogging is nice. But then someone said to me, "Hang on, what about the word snug? Isn't that more likely?" And
I said, Yeah, totally.
That is a good point. I can't think of any more Irish, Scots Gaelic off the top of my head, but if I think of any, I will let you know.
Do you think the trans issue is big in Finland?
Well, what Finland does is it looks at what big important countries do and then imitates them about 5 or 10 years later.
That's Ireland for you.
Yeah, exactly. It's Ireland for you. It's what there was an author in the 50s called A.A. Phillips, and he had this concept of Lipton will know, cultural cringe. That's what it was called. And the idea is that basically you're a small, not very important country and you feel insignificant. So what you do is you deal with it by saying, well, I may not be as rich and important and as achieved as much as the big country, but I'm more educated and I'm more moral and I'm more physically tough.
Yeah, those that's exactly what the Irish do.
Educated, yeah. Moral, physically tough. So back when the morality was religion, oh, we're so religious, oh, but Jesus. And now it's we're so woke, more educated and more physically and more honest as well. That's another one they do. More honest. Huh. So that's a cultural cringe, A.A. Phillips.
Exactly what's happening in Ireland, because everybody's asking me, and it's like it's small country syndrome. Lots of countries are doing it. Iceland is doing it. Like, you know, Malta is doing it. New Zealand is doing it. It's very noticeable.
Iceland's population has gone up 25% in 10 years.
Has it?
And it used to be 300,000. It's now 400,000. It's all immigrants. So Iceland, it's incredible what's happened. The transformation in Iceland is unbelievable.
And the trans issues are huge in Iceland.
Yeah, because you do everything. They're very conservative. They do like in many ways. I think the 1980s was Ireland's 1950s. I mean, you literally had a referendum in, I think it was 84, making abortion being illegal part of the constitution.
1982, yeah. Extraordinary.
Right. So when we were doing that kind of change in this, we were in the 50s or something.
They're well behind. Trying to be ahead. It's awful.
Would you stop it? Just pack it. It's ridiculous what you've done. You have to have a gay prime minister. You have to have a foreign prime minister who's also gay. You have to have... It's mad. Even that guy that was prime minister in the 90s, whatever his name was, the Bertie Ahern.
Yeah, yeah.
Was recorded undercover saying based stuff and then realised what... How did you hear about this, Paul, at Lipton? The former Taoiseach of Ireland was recorded undercover saying, "Yeah, these immigrants, they're awful. That's terrible." And then he was one of the mainstream politicians. He was Fianna.
Was he the little garden gnome guy?
No, that's Michael D. Higgins. Bertie Ahern, who Ed has talked about, he was a disgrace. Like he was the Irish Prime Minister, but he's very populist. He'll do whatever you want so long as he gets the power. And like he was famous. He was the finance minister in Ireland, and they were doing a kind of a tribunal on his finances, and he couldn't account for 25,000, and he didn't have a bank account. So he was like, our finance minister didn't have a bank account because he didn't want anybody. And then they said, where did this 25,000 come from? And he said he won it on a horse.
That's what they do. They didn't have bank account. That's what they do in Ireland. Because if you've seen that film, My Left Foot, he says, here we are eating bread and butter for our breakfast, lunch and dinner, and you've got 50 fucking quid up the fucking chimney. So Irish people keep money up the chimney. and presumably Bertie Ahern, whose daughter, by the way, writes Chick Lit.
Yeah.
If you've heard of her, she's a Chick Lit writer. Right. Now we're going to move on now. So I'd like to change the subject a little bit from the whole trans thing, which we've been talking about for the last hour, and move on to fibbing. So the Scottish former First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, was living with her husband, and her husband was embezzling to the tune of hundreds of thousands of pounds, and was spending this on things like a big camp, a big Winnebago, and all kinds of malarkey. And apparently she didn't know anything about it, and didn't ask any questions, and she's just totally innocent, mate. Mm. And I was thinking that if my wife suddenly started spending hundreds of thousands of pounds on a Winnebago, on whatever else...
Yeah, but Ed, it wasn't that exotic. It was a really sad, like, glorified people carrier.
£130,000.
No, but did you see it? It looked like really sad. And what you're going to do? Drive around the dreggy countryside of Scotland? It was weird. That's a psychological condition, Stella. Why would you buy a crappy little people carrier stroke, you know, Winnebago, to travel round? And he seemed to leave it on his mother's drive, didn't he? I don't think he hardly got driven anywhere. So it was almost like he was acting out. He wanted to, you know, do fraud, but it was such pathetic. At least in America, they'd go to Vegas and have like 2 weeks on cocaine and hookers. They do it the right way. You don't do it the Scottish way.
But there, you are saying something right, that there's some sort of instinct in some people to defraud. Now, I don't know about this man, but they will, the effort they'll put into defrauding is way beyond what they put in. They'd make more if they just went the honest route.
So, and also, how do you expect never to get caught? Because the party accounts, it was quite a large proportion of party accounts. Yeah, when did he think it wasn't going to be traced?
I think that's the compulsion. They want to pull one over.
It wasn't rational, was it?
No, it's not rational.
It was random shit. He spent £2,600 on salt grinders and £4,225 on a fountain pen. It was like random, insane things. Fortnum Mason advent calendars at £200 each. DVD box sets. It's like he had an addiction. He had the money, and he had the Alibaba laundry baskets worth £70.89 in 2010. £12,000 on Apple computers. The complete season one and two of Borgen. I don't know what that is.
That's some kind of Norwegian, isn't it? Yeah, Scandi series.
Scandi drama. A Volkswagen Golf of £16,489. Mount Blanc white gold fountain pen for £4,225. I mean, it's insane. It's just like he had the money, and this Burrell guy, and he needed to spend it or he'd go mad. I mean, it's crazy. But she must have noticed. They live in the same house, and presumably their bedrooms are next to each other. She must have noticed that these expensive items were manifesting.
But also, that it's the minimum it's cost so far is £2 million, the investigation, and that's not accounting for court time, I think. And he could have pled guilty much earlier on. He's cost Scottish people another £2 million on top of everything he did.
Crazy.
I mean, it's completely mad. £2,618 on two Fueles, I don't know how you pronounce it, pepper and salt grinders.
Wow.
He needed to have the best pepper and salt grinders.
He wouldn't have, you know, the best pepper grinder. It's called the pepper cannon, and it's made of like aircraft aluminium, and it's relatively, it's about, was it 80 quidish? It's amazing. It's about five times faster than your normal pepper grinder.
Amazing. What do they call council estates in Scotland? Schemes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He had to have the best pepper grinder on the scheme. So that when his mates came round, they were like, oh, in a Welsh accent. They were like, oh, you've got the best grinder there. He included The Origins of Totalitarianism for £159.99 from the Folio Society. Do you remember that in the Telegraph magazine on the back? Yeah. They used to advertise stupid things with the Folio Society where you could buy overpriced.
But Ed, I'm not affiliated, but I do recommend to everyone the Pepper Cannon. I think it's American. It's American made. Oh, Stella, you haven't lived until you've used a big phallic Pepper Cannon.
Well, I've seen people getting very excited about their Pepper Cannons, but.
Oh, well, seriously.
But I wonder what's going on in their household.
What, to use a pepper cannon?
No, Sturgeon and the husband. You know what I mean? It's...
£49 wine pourer. He paid £42.99 on Grand Theft Auto 5. Well, I've been playing that for years, mate. I mean,
But how did she not know he was buying this rubbish? Where did he put it?
He said, oi, what are you doing playing Grand Theft Auto 5? You're an old man. What's the matter with you? I don't like the idea of living in a country where there's a first minister that has a husband that plays Grand Theft Auto 5.
If, for example, you were reading out and it said he spent £5,000 on a thick pancake foundation makeup, I'd totally understand £10,000 on perma wigs. Yeah. All of that would make a lot more sense.
£5,000 on Fortnite skins. I mean, if you play Fortnite, then you can get these skins and they make you more powerful.
Like a kid,
yeah. No, I just made that bit up. But the Grand Theft Auto 5 thing is true. What do you think, Lipton? You haven't said anything for a while.
He's sulking
because I didn't let him say enough. He's sulking. He is. I know when he gets in a mood like this, or he's looking at one of the Lipton. Are you upset, Lipton?
Yes.
Why?
Oh.
Oh, no. I think it might be noisy in the background. We could have upset him, but I think it all could be the noise in the background. Yeah, he's nodding.
Paul is right.
Well, sorry about that, Lipton. I would
it's
like.
It's like being with someone who's been kidnapped, isn't it? Nod if you're okay, Lipton.
Yeah.
Or apparently, I was at a pub in Luton recently, and in March it was, and on the loo door, the men's loo door, it said that if you have some kind of problem, you should go to the barmaid and ask Sharon or something. And then
Ed, you know, you did quite a lot of data analysis.
Yeah.
Do you know how many of your stories begin with "I was in the toilet"?
Well, it's where a chap does his best thinking, isn't it?
Apparently.
So
it's certainly not on this channel, Ed.
No, I go to the loo before I come on this channel, do my best thinking, and then express it on.
All right, got you.
I'm not sitting on the loo now.
Well,
I'm sitting
wouldn't
on
that be luxurious though if you got a Jolly Heretic commode?
That would be good. Yeah, I haven't seen a commode.
And we'd see, you'd have a glassy look in your eyes, and we'd know you were going. Even if you were still talking. I don't think anyone can keep talking without the glassy look in their eyes.
I was once interviewing over the phone a guy who's quite famous in Finland called Rickard Antala. And he's in a show called Mad Ventures, which is very funny. And he goes on sort of mad tours of different countries. And I know for a fact that while I was interviewing him over the phone, he was having a slash. It was like a hero. So he was having a wee while I was interviewing him.
Oh my God.
Have you ever heard of the guy? Is it David Sedaris? I think he was an American or Canadian raconteur. And he worked for a men's magazine, and he did a review. It was called Stadium Mate. It was basically like a catheter, so you could go to sporting events, and you could just wee. So he was trying it out. He was reviewing it. So he turns up at a hotel, and he's booking his room, and he said he thought he'd just try it out. And he said that the receptionist just knew what he was doing, because your eyes give you away.
That's fascinating. I wasn't where your eyes give you away. Although apparently
Ed, I don't mean to be crude, but I might as well go. Don't you have a poo face?
Well, I'm not aware of it, Paul. Because
we'll try in the mirror. Get a mirror next time you go, and you'll have a glassy-eyed expression.
Paul,
what? Lipton?
Will you be coming to London with us?
No, I hate London, Lipton.
Why?
It's a horrible place. I don't want to get stabbed.
So what's going on with your dinner? You're going to have six people who are going to come and you're going to entertain them.
Yes, I am. Yes, and Lipton is as well.
Will Lipton play his piano?
No.
Yes.
I think that should be, yeah. Can you play the piano, Lipton? Do you practice on it much?
Mm-mm.
No.
It's big.
Oh.
There's a hole in the world like a great black pit, and it's filled with people who are filled with shit, and the vermin of the world inhabit it, and it goes by the name of London. In the words of Stephen Sondheim there from the Sweeney Todd. Anyway, we've moved off topic a little bit, as happens sometimes on this show, Stella. Not on the interviews, like the recording.
I blame Stella normally. We're tip-top and we stay on topic, and Stella's distracted us.
You've obviously fallen off a cliff.
There's been a lot of mixing metaphors today. I mean, Stella said that she was drowning in the trans issue and engulfed by it, which are, of course, quite different things. Some chaps just sent two questions, so I'm going to answer those questions. Thank you, sir. Where was I? James Ogden says about the guy money scroll in the chat. I don't know what that means, sir. Ataraxaraxia A says, it's my understanding that lawsuits are finally cleaning up a lot of the gender dysphoria nonsense. The victims are now able to get money for what was done. Is that correct, Stella? Are people suing?
Yeah, definitely. People are suing, and there's been two lawsuits in America, both in the multi-million, certainly in the millions. And these are detransitioners who say you should not have medicalized. You should not have medicalized. I was vulnerable. Like I say, I run meetings a few times a week. And these people, they're furious. And every one of them will take a case if they can. They're all looking to take a case. And some of them will successfully take a case. And
these people dogmatically assert and manipulatively assert, do what I want or I'll kill myself. So you do what they want, and then they sue you.
Hang on, though. Some of them would have been kids, and they would have gone to the counsellor saying, I don't know who I am, and I don't know, I don't like myself. And they were told, maybe you're trans. You know, when you actually get to know them, you find out there was a lot more people. As you imagine, you're at your lowest ebb. You're a little bit all over the place. Maybe you're a little lesbian. You don't want to be a lesbian, and you're a bit all. And you think, maybe I'm a boy. And some clinician says, yeah, you are. Take this. This is the way to go. So when you actually hear the treatment they got, it was really, really bad. Some of them got really bad treatment.
It's so easily solvable. Anyone under 18, it should be absolutely legal to do any life-changing surgery until they're of age to choose for themselves. And even then, they might make a stupid decision.
And even then, I would argue, Paul, that even if they're over 18, they've probably got some kind of personality disorder.
Oh, I know. Yeah, but there comes a point, at what point do you give people autonomy in their own lives? So it's a difficult question, I understand. But you know for a fact, you don't give people total legal autonomy while they're still legally a child.
No, that's indeed. But I think if they've got some kind of personality disorder, they shouldn't have legal autonomy ever.
Yeah, but on that basis, you wouldn't have a driving license, Ed. So you have to nuance this.
It's a difference. It's not a driving license. This is healthcare. This has been offered as a healthcare intervention, and that's the difference. Because when you go to your doctor, you presume that they are talking like an expert, and if they think you should transition, you should. So these people who go to the doctor saying, oh, "I don't know, I'm a little bit all over the place," and the doctor says, "Yes, you should transition." Well, now it's the doctor's fault, because the doctor shouldn't be recommending medical interventions that have no evidence base and that do not suggest on any level that your life are going to improve. It's going to have more problems. So to call it healthcare is inappropriate.
So let's crystallize it. Which is worse, this, what we're talking about now, this thing that's been happening, or the Magdalen laundries? Which is worse for girls?
I would say medical transition, because it changed. You know, I that they're infertile, they've no sexual functioning. The ability to bounce back when you're incontinent and your genitals have been removed and your breasts have been removed. It's you know, you've got a hysterectomy, you can't have babies. The ability to kind of form relationships and move on. Well, the Magdalen laundries were dreadful, but you could ultimately move on once you got out of it. Now, if you're stuck in it, you can't move on. But once you got out of it, you could.
On this channel, you should have a new item, Tragedy Top Trumps.
Yeah, as I said, but with some of them, though, you had, I suppose, something that's a bit like Stockholm Syndrome with some of these girls that were in the Magdalen laundries, where they'd become nuns. There were some cases of that. So almost like, I thought that's identified with the abuser, really, or the aggressor.
Well, yeah, but when you look at lobotomies, which is a very good, I think, interesting analogy, that an awful lot of people who had lobotomies were pleased that they had lobotomies. They said, it was good for me. It was good. Then what actually came into...
Sorry, Stella, yeah? But isn't that difficult to understand? Once they've had a lobotomy, are they in a good position to judge their own mental situation?
As well as, yeah, you're right. And as well as that, their family said that they had, you know, the ability for the human to say, I regret that, is pretty limited. Even when you've been married for 20 years and you say, it was dreadful, now we're moving on. Most people say, oh, I'm glad I got married, I have my children.
Yeah,
you know,
for example, how many people would genuinely say, I regret having kids, when deep down they might?
Yeah.
Because so you're conditioned, aren't you?
Well, it's also survivor instinct. I don't think our ability to kind of contemplate that last 20 years was all a mess and I shouldn't have done any of it and I could have avoided it. I don't think we can take that. And I think that's very true about other things, such as, for example, medical transition, that a lot of people think, I have to live. A lot of people who come to my meetings, for example, they think, I'm going to stay transitioned because I'm past the point of no return. I've medicalized, I've had a hysterectomy, I look like a male, I've got male pattern balding, I've got facial hair, I've got bum hair, I've got chest hair, mastectomy. I can't go back. So I'm going to live with the cards I have. And they're very welcome to our meetings and we're very, you know, warm with them. But the ability to say, and I regret it all, is big.
It's the psychology is fascinating. It's like no one who gets married ever says, for example, everyone has to say my bride or groom is the most beautiful creature in the world. No one says my wife I'm about to get married to is a right minger. It just, it cannot be said, can it? Yeah, even if it's objectively true.
There's that David Mitchell sketch about that, isn't there, where he gets the most beautiful person in the world, my wife, and the best man gets up and says, most beautiful person in the world? What are you talking about? Top 50% maybe, but that's surely due to her relative youth. This is the case. By the way, in Finnish, in literal translation, what Stella called bum hair is called ass grass.
Translated, or is that the actual phrase?
I'm just translating it directly from the
phrase. Oh, yeah, it would have been odd, wouldn't it, if it was ass grass and that was the actual word?
That would have been odd, yes. But the young people do throw a lot of English into the conversation. But no, it's true. I mean, I had a friend who married.
Do you shave your backside, Ed?
Do you say your backside? I thought she was talking about anal. Anyway,
look, you were just talking about arse grass. I'm just curious whether you shave.
I don't have any hair on my. Not like Father Ted, who of course famously had downy hair in that whole area. But
downy or bushy?
Downy. That was the word that was used in Father Ted. But anyway, moving off that issue, which is a little bit much, Paul. Even for you,
Stella, stop distracting us.
If I was in a pub, I think I'd be looking over to say, "Who can I move over? can I go over there and say hello and get rid of these clowns?"
Well, you are in an online pub. James Ogden says, what restaurant food is in London? I'm afraid I don't know the restaurant yet. Lipton hasn't booked it yet.
We don't know the restaurant.
Don't book it. And don't say what is Lipton, because remember, Hope Not Hate might turn up and film us undercover. and there's sort of, that racist black man. anyway, where was I? I'm trying to get back on topic now. it's impossible. I just keep thinking, ask for
us. I didn't finish my point about the lobotomies. So what took place instead of lobotomies? They didn't ban it. What happened was antidepressants came in, medication came in, so better interventions came in for the same issue. And then it became culturally kind of a no-no to get a lobotomy. And I think that's a kind of an interesting kind of trajectory that, like, when the culture starts to realize this isn't actually helping people, I think people will become realize there's better interventions.
Yeah, but it's very, very hit and miss, wasn't it? Basically sticking something up someone's nose and smashing this.
Going through their eyes with an ice pick.
Through the eye. It's the only Portuguese person that has ever won a Nobel Prize.
That's right.
Was for lobotomies. I have a question from.
I thought you were going to say he had a lobotomy. That would have been an achievement.
No, he invented it.
All right.
James Ogden, founder of Pea Movement, was a paedophile and forced the brothers to do things together. They ended it.
Yeah, that's John Money. So he was accused of paedophilia and with David Reimer and his the twin. You know, certainly it was very inappropriate, John Money, and it does look like he was a degenerate. He was a sexual degenerate, John Money. He really was.
Was he Irish?
No, he's New Zealand, actually.
Oh, because I had a friend at university called Justin Money. I wondered if they were related. He was Irish.
Was he degenerate?
No, he wasn't degenerate at all. No, he didn't drink. And he was some kind of Catholic convert. I think he was Anglo-Irish, I think he's a stonemason. If you're watching, Justin, I hope everything's going well. And he did a philosophy degree, I haven't seen him since the year 2000. I missed him. He once told me that his father was a doctor, and he said if you send a letter to just put Dr. Money, Ireland. It'll probably get to me because there's only one Money family. So
I hope that.
I hope. Well, it was very. I mean, I'm going back to the early 2000s in Ireland. I remember ringing up the people in Dublin about getting a coach, and I said, "Well, what time does this coach leave?" And I said I was a student, and he goes, "Oh, our coaches leave at times that are very convenient to students." But what time? Well, at lunchtime and tea time. And I said, "Well, what time?" And he wasn't able to give me a time. It was about tea time, about 5 o'clock. And that's what it left at. It left once it was quite full. That's where it left.
Well, you know, there is a thought process behind that, and actually that, you know, Celtic cultures and African cultures used time as an event base. So I'll see you after dinner. I'll see you when I fed the baby. I'll see you after lunch or whatever. That's how we do. While the Anglo-Saxons used it on the sun, you know, I'll see you at 3 o'clock, I'll see you at 2 o'clock. So we're working on two different cultures of ways. I prefer, I'll see you when I put the baby down. I prefer event based time.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
It is.
Okay. We're going to move on now to the next subject I've pulled down here. Yes. Lipton, can you turn the children down? Turn the children down. Okay. Now, the next thing that has come to light in the last week is, of course, the old two-tier policing chaos, bio-Leninism, whatever, in the UK. And we have a case of a boy in Southampton who was defending himself against a Sikh who attacked him with a knife. And he was arrested for being racist while he was bleeding to death, which I think is insane. And it goes back to this whole idea what we were talking about earlier about the judiciary and them coming of age and then them doing woke things, as Paul was saying. Well, we now have a police force that has been inculcated with woke things, coming of age, and doing very stupid things because police officers aren't very intelligent, really. And so this seems to be particularly dangerous. And that you have the most extreme case, which is someone that has been stabbed and is bleeding, and an Asian saying he was racist to me, and them arresting him and handcuffing him while he's bleeding, and eventually he bleeds to death. I mean, you talk about backlash, Stella, with the trans issue, but I mean, this is completely insane, isn't it?
Oh, God, yeah. I don't know anything about it. I haven't heard that story, but it sounds wild. But, you know, I don't envy the police their position. They seem to be flailing all over the place and, you know, getting very hung up on social media posts and making really bad decisions about who to. You feel they've been workshopped to death and all instinct of being a policeman has been knocked out of them.
Well, wasn't there the case in Germany where that guy, was it the AfD in East Germany, but there was a big brawl, or there was a little brawl in the marketplace, and the guy was stabbing the German guys, but the police instinctively tried to arrest the German guy, and the police got stabbed by the Islamist because they tried to arrest the wrong person because they just, their gut feeling now is got to be his, you know, it won't be. It just beggars belief that they don't follow the evidence of their own eyes anymore.
Wild.
No, well, you've got, I mean, that's the problem, isn't it? That you've got people that are the policemen. The whole point of the police force is that you appoint ordinary people of average IQ, and those people are brought up among criminal types to some extent, and therefore they understand them and they understand how they think. And that's why it's good for police officers to be of that kind. That's why it's good. And now we have women with sociology degrees that jump the queue and become the chief inspectors or whatever because they have a sociology degree, so they're in charge, and then you have the Stephen Lawrence thing, which basically there was a policeman, an old man, that said, "Oh yeah, I treat everybody the same," and he said, "No, you can't do that. You don't treat everyone the same. Treat them differently according to their differences." You just have people that aren't very bright that are then inculcated with nonsense, and it's very dangerous because the laws are so vague on things like free speech that you get police officers arresting people because you offended him, and that's not actually a crime. But when you have an IQ of about 95, then you are, you understand, your level of understanding is that, oh yeah, offending people is a crime.
Yeah, but you have to have the villain, you know, the right person. And in fairness, their job is to turn up at work and do follow the rules. The rules should be right. The policies should be right. Mm. And we fed them, like we as a society have fed the police the wrong rules, the wrong workshops, the wrong training. They're just doing what they're told. They're humble enough. Like, people give a lot of grief to the parents who've transitioned their kids. And I'm like, they're humble enough to follow the instructions of the doctors. The police are humble enough to follow the instructions of their superiors.
Stella, no, I'm sorry. I'll push back on that. There's lots of evidence on YouTube and stuff where you see the police deliberately applying two-tier judgments.
Yeah.
And because that, they have discretion. No, but they're not all automatons. And there's one footage of a woman in a mostly Muslim area where there's a Christian preacher, and the Muslim men ask the police officer to arrest him. And she says, no, he's not doing anything wrong. He's entitled to his freedom of speech. And it stands out because she applied common sense. And everyone was like, wow, meaning that's what a policeman could do or a policewoman could do.
Yeah,
they choose not to.
Yeah, but like, can I just push back on your pushback? Because I kind of think we should make sure that if we are employing people, imagine if their average IQ is a little bit below the average, and they need to be guided properly, and they have been very badly misguided. So they think two-tier is right. They think go straight for this person and not that person. They've been taught that by workshops and training. You could say, well, that's not good enough. They should think better. And I'm like, well, they should be taught better. They should be given better guidance. They should be given better policies by people who are more intelligent than them.
But isn't that a bit process-driven? Aren't you removing people's autonomy? They've got responsibility as ethical agents not to be knobheads.
Yeah, I know. But I kind of think, at some point you have to think that the people who are teaching them are actually the problem. The people who are giving workshops are actually the problem.
I'd agree with that, except all I'm saying is there's lots of evidence to show that people you would know the Catholic distinction between crimes of commission and omission. There are police people who commit crimes of commission by enthusiastically applying these stupid rules when they don't have to. They have discretion. So you're right, except they do have some autonomy and they choose not to use it.
Yeah, I've met them. They're awful.
Yeah,
they should. I think that they. But when you say I was only obeying orders, you should get a worse sentence than if you say, "Yeah, I was doing it and I wanted to," because you're.
But
a coward.
If you've got, I hear you. But you've got to go for the people who were given the orders as first problem. The order givers are the worst, if you ask me.
Yes.
Because the less intelligent people have to follow orders. That's the way society is created.
Stella, Lipton and I have mentioned this nearly every week. There are no consequences. So I take away crime, but the people who fail as chief executives on hundreds of thousands a year, they fail miserably. They get golden handshakes. They're never held accountable for all the screw-ups they commit.
Except the chief executive of the Scottish National Party. He's being held accountable for all of his pepper mills and his fountain pens.
And the judge in this case should make sure that he's accountable. That's where I would say, now the judge should give it to him and give it to him properly.
Yeah, but also his wife must have known what was going on because it's his wife.
Must have.
And she's seeing all these golden pepper mills and platinum pens and Winnebagos made of diamonds.
Do you have a shared credit card?
I do, yeah.
All right.
I'm not
allowed anywhere near any money.
I think credit cards are a stupid idea. What's the point of them? I never use it. I never, when it says credit or debit, I always put debit. What's the hell the point of me putting it? What's the point? Don't buy things you can't afford.
Ed,
Lipton.
Credit cards are for executives and entrepreneurs. The popularity of credit of the credit card has trickled down a luxury product to low IQ people with low financial literacy. You should have a credit card if you're doing business. Credit cards are not really for ordinary people.
I agree. Credit cards should be banned. Anyway, we're about finished now. So I would like to say this. Paul, the Basque people are indeed a genetic, they're very unusual genetically. They're overwhelmingly hunter-gatherers in a context genetically, whereas those that surround them are massively Anatolian farmers, and they only have a small amount of Anatolian farmer DNA. They were in a glacial refuge. 35% of them have the R1 negative blood type, where it's 15% worldwide, and 47% of them have the R1 blood type, and 50% of them have the, so they are indeed very unusual. I did my homework, and I hope they are indeed a genetic relative isolate. So there we go. This is something from last week, so don't worry.
People in the chat objected to genetic facts and got really upset.
People from the Basque country, is it?
Yeah.
Yes, Basque country. Yeah, that's right. And James Ogden says, credit cards, you do get points, though free money. Yeah, I don't know, but I would ban them. All right. So I would like to thank you all for tuning in. I'd like to thank Stella for coming on. It's been very interesting. We will see you all next week, chaps, and tally-ho. And goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.